We're holding on Bays, Umud Bays, 8 lines from the bottom. So the Gemara had been talking about the Mishnah had talked about Tinui and Stira. We know the two things that have to happen for a woman to be a Soiter. Her husband has to warn her that Alti Sasri Mishpani, don't be alone with so-and-so. And then it has to be that she actually secluded herself with that guy. So we have in the Mishnah, Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, how many Edom are needed for the Kinui and how many are needed for the Stira. And then in addition, the Gemara also brought the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, who said that actually you don't even need that he says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. So in other words, he's giving a different version of what Rabbi Eliezer says, that the kinui can even be al pi atzmoi, and the stira he doesn't even mention anything at all. So we said ein l'davar sof, on the face of it, the way that he's saying it, there's never going to be an end to the matter, because it's very easy then for the husband to trump up charges against his wife to claim that he was mekane to her in private, where there's no evidence for her to disprove that, and then if she's in stira with the guy, then she's in trouble. So now in this connection, the Gemara says, Omer Panina Misura, Loi Lema Inish L'Ipse, Bismanazel, Loi Tisas Ruba Hadiploini. A man should not say to his wife, nowadays, meaning when there's no Bis Mikdash and there's no Mei Soita, actually we're going to learn at the end of the Masech that even a little while before the second Bis Mikdash was destroyed, the Mei Soita were already discontinued, but we'll get to that at the end of the Masech there. But anyway, nowadays, when there's no Beis Mikdash, a man should not say to his wife, don't be alone with Pliny, even without Aiden. Because maybe we hold like Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda that kinui can be even privately without Edim or Misatra. So then the result is if she's in seclusion with this guy, because she may not realize, and again, you may not even need Edim for the Sira. The leka ha'idna may sota l'mivdika, and you don't have nowadays may sota to test her. The whole point is, as we learned in the Mishnah, and as we're going to talk about throughout here and there throughout the Masechta, once a woman becomes a sota, she's also to her husband. By default, she's also to her husband, and there's nothing that can be done unless she drinks the may sota. So no mei sota, then she never becomes mutter to her husband. Then the isser that was on her as a result of being a sota remains. If he does kinui to her privately, and then she becomes a soita, then we're stuck. Then there's no way to undo it. And the result is that she's going to be also to him forever. So therefore, to forestall that, it's best that a man does not say to his wife, Alti Sasri Imish Koini. And this is in fact brought in Shulchan Aruch, that piece of advice, that in fact the person should not do that for that reason, because otherwise she may be stuck. Technically, there is a point the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the husband can be moichel on his kinui, but that's another matter. It's not so simple after the stira whether he can be moichel on it. And furthermore, the Rosh points out, even though Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is only within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, and the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua, but maybe you could say Rabbi Hanina might say that Rabbi Yeshua doesn't disagree on that detail. Anyway, the point is that that's how it is. So you should be careful about that. Okay. So now, the Gemara says, Omer Shlokish, Mal Loshen Kinu. What is this Loshen of Kinu? Why are we calling the warning that the husband gives his wife, Alti Sasri Mishpani? The expression in the pasuk is that he has a spirit of jealousy, the Ruach Kina, the Kinei Es Ishtai. So why are we calling that warning Kin? So Rish Lakish says, Dabra Amato Kina Bein Levein Acherim, because it's something that creates jealousy, meaning hatred, between her and other people, as the Gemara will explain. So that means, Al-Makasavar, Al-Piyatzai. Therefore, we see from that Rish Lakish also holds that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, that the kinui does not require Edim. So therefore, the fact that it doesn't require Edim, the kula alma lo yadi dekani lo, the result is the husband may warn her privately, and according to Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, that is a valid warning, that is a valid kinui, and now that triggers the next thing. If there's stira, then she becomes a soita. But the problem is, nobody else may know that he gave her this kinui because there were no edim. for Amri. So now people start saying to themselves, so what's going to happen? The woman is obviously, she doesn't want to break up her marriage. Therefore, from now on, she's going to be careful not to be alone with this man that her husband warned her against. But Amri, but people are going to say, not knowing that her husband warned her, my dekama, what's going on all of a sudden in front of her, dekab budla, that she's staying away from him or from us. But also, and the result is that it creates jealousy and creates hatred between them. So in other words, so if Rish Lakish held that the kinui had to be done in the presence of Edim, then it wouldn't be such a big deal. Once there were Edim, then it becomes public knowledge. So therefore, now when she stays away from that person or those people that she warned him, that he warned her against, then they're going to know, well, you know why? That's why she's staying away, because she doesn't want to end up being a soita and breaking up her marriage. But like this, when there does, Rav Shlokish evidently holds back Rav Yossi, that Edim are not even necessary. On the other hand, Rav Yemer Bashlemia Mishmei Da Abaya Omer, Rav Yemer Bashlemia says in the name of Abaya a different explanation. Dover Amato Kina Beino Leveino. No, the kinui is something that's so called because it creates hatred and ill feeling between him and her, between the husband and the wife. So the Gemara says, Alma Kasava Kinui Alpishnaim Edim. Evidently, then Rav Yemer Bashlemia holds that the kinui he holds like the Chachamim, that the kinui has to be in the presence of two Edim, or actually in the Mishnah you had Rav Yeshua specifically, says Mekani La Alpishnaim. So Rav Yemer Bashlemia evidently holds like Rav Yeshua that you need two Edim. Therefore, Vakula Alma Yadi Dekani La. Therefore, everybody knows that he gave her this warning. The ihu kuda osil mevid kina bahada, but that results in that there's going to be bad feeling between the two of them, just because she's going to hold it against him, that why is he suspecting her and giving her such a warning and in the presence of Edim yet, like airing the dirty laundry, so to speak, in front of everybody, and therefore it's going to create bad feelings between the two of them. So the Gemara says, Alma Kasari. Now one thing we also see from both Rish Lakish's and Rav Yemer Bashlemia's explanations, each of them is giving a different explanation of the word kinui, but both of them do have this in common, that they hold that the word kinui means hatred. That's literally the word kinui means jealousy, but it's also related to the word jealousy and hatred are not really that far apart. So both of them agree that the kinui creates bad feelings, according to Rish Lakish, between her and other people, and according to Rav Yemer Bashlemia, between her and her husband. So we see that both of them hold amakasavri de osulakanis. So we see that both of them hold that it's also for the husband to give a kinui like that to his wife. If he finds a reason to, at the beginning of the Gemara, also we mentioned that point. The Gemara had mentioned that the fact that it says, the fact that the Mishnah had begun, ha mekani la ishtoi, implies that it's not really a lachatchila dika thing. It's a bedieva dika thing. If he's mekani for her, then that's the din. What the Gemara was saying over there, and now we're saying these amiroim hold this way that in fact it's not the lachatchila dika thing to do. So in fact, the Rosh gives, now Taka, why not? If he knows that she's not behaving properly and she may be suspect of acting, of being Mazana, why shouldn't he warn her? So the Rosh actually gives a reason. He says, because, you have the famous Machloikas Beshamai Beshillel at the end of Gittin, which we'll get to in a few months, Bez Hashem, where Beshamai holds that a man can divorce his wife only because of Erevas Dover, only because of matters involving Arias. Whereas Beshillel holds that he can divorce her for any reason, even if he just burnt his food. So therefore, Beshillel, so if we say also Vakanis, we're going to hold like Beshillel. So if he feels that she's not acting right, then why should he warn her and they're still going to stay married, but then it's going to cause tremendous bad feelings between them because she's going to hold it against him that he suspects her like that. If he really suspects her to that extent that he finds the need to give a warning, don't warn her, just divorce her and have done with it. So that opinion would hold like that and say, therefore, that also the canons. So, but because both of them are saying that the word kinui implies something that causes hatred. Okay, the Gemara says, Amanda Amamutu Lakanos, what about the opinions that say that you are allowed to do kinui, which we talked about again on Beis Amud Aleph, we had such opinions, Mahulosh and kinui. So according to them, why is the warning called kinui? And the answer is, Amr of Nachman Yitzchok, Ein kinui el loshen hasra. They would say that the word kinui is actually a loshen that implies a warning. As we find that it says Hashem warned regarding his land. The Psukim and the Navi Yoel, the first two Prakim of the Navi Yoel, are talking about a terrible plague of locusts that struck out Yisrael, with waves and waves after waves of locusts for years. Eventually, the Psukim describe how the people did tshuva, and then Hashem told the locusts to go away and not come back. So Vayikane Hashem warned Le'Artsoi regarding his land that the locusts should go away and stop destroying it. So we see that the word kinui can mean warning, so according to them, it's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. The Gemara continues on this topic. Tanya, Hoyer of Meyoimer, Adam over Avera Vasei. So if a person does an Avera in secret, like possibly the Sota has done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Machu is all of the Goli. Hashem makes it announced in public that he did that Avera. So in other words, Rashi gives the example. For example, you have a woman who's mezaneh, or at least is princess dick in secret. So Hashem gives her husband the idea to be mekaneh to her, and eventually then the thing becomes publicized. Shenem of other arl of ruach kina, as the pasuk says, there passes over him a spirit of jealousy or a spirit of hatred or warning. However, we translate it kina. The ein avira ela loshen hachraza. The word avira, which means passing over, or the is only a lashon of announcing. Shenema vayitzav Moshe vayavira kol b'machne. As we find that Moshe ordered, and they had an announcement spread out throughout the camp that everybody should stop donating materials for the Mishkan because they had enough. So we see that the word vayaviru means to announce. So the same way we hear v'olav ruach kina means that Hashem causes it to be announced that the husband has warned her, and therefore that eventually the thing becomes publicized. The Gemara continues. Resh Lakish Amar Ein Adam Over Avera Elin Ken Nichnas LeRuach Shtus. Resh Lakish says that a person. Now it's interesting, by the way, the expression Resh Lakish Amar is usually the expression when he's arguing with the previous opinion. So in a way it is. There's the idea, in other words, that there's one of the Mephoroshim called Minchas Soita explains that the Reb Meir is taking the view that the Soita acted deliberately, and therefore Hashem causes her shame to be publicly exposed in front of everybody. Whereas Resh Lakish is going to take the view, it's not really a deliberate thing. It's a Ruach Shtus, it's a spirit of foolishness that enters a person and causes them to do an Avera, and therefore in a certain sense it's like an Oinus. So he says, the famous expression, a person only does an Aveda, only if there enters into him a spirit of foolishness. As the Pasuk says, any man, if his wife becomes a Sota, but the word Tiste is Tishte Ksiv, it's written with a sin, and since the Sefer Torah is without Nekudas, we can also read it as though it was with a Shin, which means that she becomes foolish. And so, in other words, the fact that she's foolish is what causes her to do the Aveda. Marshall points out, in other words, because it's literally the word tista means to turn aside from the proper road. But in that case, the word should have been tite, tough test hey, which is the usual word in Tanakh that means to turn aside. And if it actually meant just as a word of soita, then it should have been with a samach. Instead, the fact that it's spelled with a sin allows us to douch in it like this, that it's a ruach shtus. What is the ruach shtus? So we know the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya at some length the idea that every Yid knows instinctively that there are certain Averas that were definitely going to separate him from Hashem, such as Avodah Zarah, and he would never do that, even if they were threatening his life. So the Ruach Shtus is that a person figures that the small Averas, big deal, they don't harm my relationship with Hashem so much, and therefore I can indulge in them and not worry about it. Were a person to realize that every Avera separates him from Avishta, then Itaka wouldn't do any Avera. That's the Ruach Shtus. And of course, you have the whole thing of Shtus Kedusha versus Shtus Klippa that's talked about extensively in Chassidus. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Tonad Veda Bishmal, Mipnei Mahem Mina Torah Eid Echa Besoita. Why does the Torah trust one? Why does the Torah trust one aid when it comes to a Soita? So we learned on Bezam and we learned on Daf Beis that there's machlokas how many edim are needed for the kinui, or whether any are needed at all, or for the stira. But for tuma, we said it's a given that one aid, we established it on the basis of psukim, that one aid who testifies that she became tume, that she actually committed adultery, is enough to ask her to her husband. Now, normally, we should say two edim are needed for such a thing. Why over here says Rabbi Shmuel was one aid enough? So the reason is, because the matter has legs. We learned about that at the end of Nazir not so long ago, that the idea is, in other words, like we have a very strong reason to believe that something happened. Because after all, the husband warned her. She was secluded with this very same guy that he warned her not to be alone with. Therefore, so there's very good and the Eidah and Meidah sheets Meya, and on top of that, you have one aid testifying that she's Tomei. So with all of that, there's good reason to believe that one aid, even though normally normally we might require two aid in this sort of thing. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Omalei Rapapa Labaya, you have to ask, we're saying so far that the kinui precedes the stira. What's the order? We're saying so far, you have the kinui, the husband wounds her, alti sasri nishpoini, then she secludes herself with the guy, then that makes her a soita, and everything goes from there. So the papa asks, we have a basic question. When it says, when does it say kinui? When does it say the over all of ruach kina, the kineas ishtoi, is only after the pasuk describes that she was secluded with the guy and she may or may not have become tomei. The order of the psukim is, v'shochav ish oisa shichvas zera, that a man may have lain with her, and her husband doesn't know about it, v'nistir of ahinitma, she was secluded, and she may have become tomei. There's no aid, which we said means there's not even one aid, and she wasn't raped, because we said if she was, then she would still be mutter to her husband. Only then does the pasuk say, v'over olav ruach kina v'kinei asishtoi, and whether she became tomei or not. So the papa is saying, where are we getting that kinui precedes stira and tumah, if the pasuk is putting it afterwards? Omalei, Sabaya answers him, v'ovar means ukvar ovar. The word v'ovar does not mean and now there passes over. It means and already there had previously passed over him a spirit of kina. So therefore, it means, in other words, before there had ever been the v'nistera, the hinitma, already there had been the v'kines, the v'ovar, and the v'kine. Rapapa asks, Elamiata, by that logic, what about you have by Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, when they want their land on the east side of the Yarden, and Moshe makes a deal with them that if they cross the Yarden and help the other Shvatim conquer Eretz Yisrael proper, then they'll get those lands. And so he calls together the Nesiim and all, and he's still talking to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, and he tells them, V'ovar lachem kol cholutz, that every armed man v'ovar in front of you, in front of the other Jews, hachinami, are you going to say the same thing that v'ovar means in the past? Of course not. This is not Moshe telling them in the past you've gone and helped the Jews conquer. It means in the future you're going to. So v'ovar there in the future means in the future. Why shouldn't v'ovar here also mean in the future? So the answer is, sure, but since the psukim continue over there, that he makes it clear, he goes on to say in the next pasuk, he says, and when the land is conquered before Hashem, and then you will return to these lands, so that makes it clear that the whole thing is future tense. Mashma de lahabo. So it's obviously implying that everything that he's saying in those psukim is for the future. If you will pass over and you will do such and such, and the land will be conquered, et cetera, then you'll have these lands. So therefore, it's clear from the context over there that it's past tense. Elohacha, but over here, Isakudatach Basa Tumah Ustira. If you're going to say that the Psukim means Isakudatach Kidichtivi, if you're going to say that it means exactly as it's written, that it means for Ovar is Basa Tumah Ustira, Kinui Lamali, then you have to ask, what would you even need the Kinui for anyway? Once there was Stira, and once there was a suspicion of Tumah, then you wouldn't even really need, then you wouldn't really need the Kinui in the first place. So obviously, the point of the kinui is, in order that the stira should mean something, then it has to have been preceded by kinui. And therefore, necessarily, we have to understand there that the v'ovar means past tense. Whereas by Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, the context shows you that it means future tense. So the Gemara continues, Tanu Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. We said before that we had the different opinions about whether it's a good thing for a man to be mekaneh to his wife. So Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, A man is not mekane for his wife unless a spirit from Hashem enters into him. What kind? We're going to see in a second what kind of spirit. As the pasuk says, a spirit of kina passes over him, and he's mekane, and he warns his wife. So there has to be, in other words, it doesn't just happen. It's not just something that happens spontaneously. It's something that happens. It's something that Hashem causes something to prompt him to do it. So my ruach, what kind of spirit are we talking about? So Rabbanon Amri, so the chachamim of the yeshiva of Rav Ashi said ruach tumah. It means a spirit of tumah. It means, in other words, that the sultan provokes the husband to suspect his wife possibly unjustly and to warn her not to be secluded with this guy. So in other words, they hold like Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yehuda Shlomim before that also the Kanos, and therefore they say when a man is Mekane, then it shows that it was a wrong spirit. It shows that it was a spirit of the Satan that entered into him and caused him to do it. On the other hand, Rav Ashi himself disagrees and says Ruach Tara. On the contrary, it means a spirit of Tara. It means on the contrary, it means that these are good Malachim that Hashem sends to give him the idea. To look out for the tznius of his wife and of his household, and therefore, and they were the ones then who put the idea in his brain to be mekane to her. Which according to him, then it comes out it's something good to do. So the Gemara says, when we stab a commander on a ruach tara, now it's more logical to accept Rav Ashi's opinion that it's a ruach tara, that it's a good thing. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, V'kineis ishtoi reshus divid Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel holds that the words V'kineis ishtoi are not a requirement that he has to. It's a reshus. If the husband wants, then he can be mekane his wife, and then the rest of it happens. Rabbi Akiva oi mechoiva. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says it means it's an obligation on a man if he sees her, if he sees his wife being alone with other men, then it's an obligation on him to be mekane to her. So the Gemara says, "Yamet b'shleima ruach tara." If you're going to say like Rav Ashi that the ruach that Rabbi Shmuel was talking about is a ruach tara, then shaper, then good. Eli amet ruach tuma. But if you're going to say it's spirit of tuma, what do you mean? Reshus v'choyvel ayula le'inish ruach tuma b'nafshei. Would a person be allowed to, according to Rabbi Shmuel, or required to, according to Rabbi Akiva, to allow a ruach of tuma to enter into him and incite him to do something? Obviously not. Therefore, if we're saying that if Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are arguing whether it's Rishus or Choyva, and neither one of them hold that it's also to do, then it must be a Ruach Tara, and it means, in other words, that Rabbi Shmuel will say it's an optional thing. If a man sees his wife behaving this way, then it's up to him whether to warn her. And Rabbi Akiva says, in that case, the best thing for him, the proper thing for him to do, would be to warn her. But definitely not. We can't consider it a Ruach Tumah, because that would be an Aveira to allow a Ruach Tumah to take a, for a man to allow a Ruach Tumah to take him over. So the Gemara continues, Gufa, getting back to what we said before, we said, V'kines, let's analyze this machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva a little more. V'kines ishle reshus div Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva amchoiva. That Rabbi Shmuel says that the V'kine is not a requirement, it's only a reshus. Tosfos, by the way, has an interesting discussion over here. When we say that there were 613 mitzvahs, does that mean that according to Rabbi Shmuel, there would be fewer mitzvahs? Because according to him, something that Rabbi Akiva counts as a mitzvah, according to Rabbi Shmuel, would be a reshus, and vice versa. So how would that work? So Tosfos says, okay, what you could have is, for example, we find in other places where Rabbi Shmuel holds that something is a mitzvah d'oraisa, Rabbi Akiva will hold it's only an asmachta, and it's not really a mitzvah d'oraisa. So therefore, each one of them can come out with 613 mitzvahs, they would just count them differently. An interesting idea is also, at least as far as one possibility of that, is machlokes in Menachos, whether the four tzitzis count as one mitzvah or as four. So one possibility that's brought up is actually that the opinion that says that there are four would have to count three other mitzvahs as reshus in order not to have too many, whereas the opinion, which is how the Rambam counts them, for example, that has all the tzitzis as one mitzvah, would have to can say that other ones are daraisa as well, including this one. So that's one example where Rabbi Shmuel holds that something that the Torah says to do is not a mitzvah, it's not something you're required to do, but rather a reshus. Here's some other examples. Lo yitamo reshus divrei Rabbi Shmuel, v'Rav Akiva amachoiva. Another one is when it says that a kohen becomes tome for his wife or for any of his close seven relatives. Again, Rabbi Shmuel says it means it's optional. If he wants to become tome to them, he can. but he's not obligated to. And Rabbi Akiva says it's a chayv, but he's required to. Another example, actually, the Meir says even Rabbi Shmuel would agree that it's mitzvah derabbanan, but he would hold that it's not considered a requirement midaraisa. Another example, la'olam b'hem ta'avoidu. Another example, the Torah says you should work with avodim knanim forever. In other words, unlike an eved ivri who has a time limit for his servitude, 6 years, or if his ear is pierced, then the yovel. An eved knani, there's no such time limit. And the pasuk says la'olam b'hem ta'avoidu. So again, the same machlokes. Rishus divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Again, Rabbi Shmuel says that means optional. You're allowed to free your eved knani if you want, but you're not obligated to. You could if you want, you could if you don't want. But Rabbi Akiva, I'm a choyva. And Rabbi Akiva says that it's also a requirement, meaning according to him, it's also unless you have a good reason to free an Eved Knaan. We'll learn in Gittin in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, we'll learn more about that. We'll have a long sugya, a couple of Mishnayos, on the Dinim of Avadim in Masech Gittin, and we'll talk about this point that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that as usual, when you have a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and one other Tana, halacha could have Akiva mechavei roi, and that's how it is over here. So the halacha is like him, that it's also to free an Eved Knani unless you have a good reason for it, unless it's for a Dvar Mitzvah or various other things, as we'll learn about in Gittin, Be'ez Hashem. So we have three different cases where Rabbi Shmuel holds that something is reshus, and Rabbi Akiva holds that it's choyva. So the Gemara says, "Amalei the papa abaya, va'amilor the mesharshi l'rova." So the papa asked abaya, or some said a mesharshi asked rova. Leimer Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Akiva, v'chol haTorah kula ha'ochi pligi. Should we say that throughout the whole Torah, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva have the same kind of argument? Is it maybe not necessarily only these three cases? Maybe any essay in the Torah? In other words, the question is, Rashi says, according to Rabbi Shmuel, how would you have any essay in the Torah? Anytime the Torah says do something, Rabbi Shmuel could understand it means reshus, means do it if you want to, don't do it if you don't want to. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, how would there ever be any mitzvah essay? Are you going to say throughout the whole Torah that Rabbi Shmuel is going to say that everything is reshus and Rabbi Akiva is going to say it's chayva? Omalei, so Abaya answers her papa, or Rava answers her mesharshia. No, of course Rabbi Shmuel holds that there are many mitzvahs that say. Hocha b'kroi pligi. In these specific cases, they're arguing about the meanings of psukim. So let's go through them one by one. So we have the machlokas about being mekane, a man being mekane, a husband being mekane to his wife, where Rabbi Shmuel says reshus, Rabbi Akiva says it's choyva. What are they basing themselves on? At my time with Rabbi Shmuel, sabalaki hai tani. The reason is because Rabbi Shmuel holds like the following tani. The tani, Rabbi Lezman Yaakov Omer, klapei she'omer Torah. Now we have to consider, given that the Torah says lois sisno asachicha b'lovecha. The Torah says you're not allowed to hate your brother in your heart. And that means exactly that. If you have something against somebody, you're not, the Rambam actually understands the halacha. He explains exactly that. It means, in other words, the mitzvah is, if you have something against somebody, don't keep it bottled up inside and just hate him in your heart and you're pretending to be friendly to him on the outside. Tell him outright what it is that you don't like, what he did. So that way, hopefully he'll ask mechila and do tshuva. So Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says, Yochuk Gonzu, you would think that a similar thing applies in this kind of case also, where a husband has reason for his wife to suspect his wife of being unfaithful. Maybe he should just ignore it and then put it out of his mind. Therefore, the pasuk says that a spirit of kina passes over to him, and he's mekaneh his wife. So, in other words, therefore, we can't say that the pasuk is telling us a mitzvah to do it. The pasuk is telling us you should know this is an exception to the rule of loisisna. If you do this, you're not over on loisisna. But that doesn't necessarily make it a mitzvah to do. It means, in other words, were it not for that pasuk, it would be an avera to do because loisisna. Now it makes it reshus. So Rabbi Shmuel, basing himself on that, has no reason to consider it a choyva. So therefore, he says this is an exception to the rule. But Rabbi Akiva, what does Rabbi Akiva answer to that? He says kinyach renafsin. Sure, but it says again in the pasuk kina, it says v'kineas ishtoi v'hinitmar, or v'kineas ishtoi v'hiloinitmar. So therefore, one of them can teach us that he's allowed to be mekane, and the other one can teach us that it's a mitzvah for him to be mekane. Well. Rabbi Shmuel. Also, what does Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He says, listen, I did borrow the mitzvah, v'hin itzmah, v'hin lein itzmah, k'siv nami, v'hin es ishtoi. Because the pasuk does have to mention both possibilities. It has to mention that he warns her whether, and we don't know whether she became tamei or not. So the pasuk has to mention the point whether she became tamei or not, because otherwise we would mistakenly think that she becomes a sota and drinks the sota water only if she was for sure tamei, and of course that's not so, just the opposite. If she's for sure tamei, she doesn't drink the water. So therefore, so the pasuk needed to say v'hinei tamar and v'hinei tamar, and once it does, then it repeats the words v'kineis ishtoi, even though Rabbi Shmuel says there's nothing really to doubt from there. And lichidatana dvei Rabbi Shmuel. This is like what the braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel says. The tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel, kol parusha shenamru v'nishnes. Whenever you have a parusha in the Torah that's said one time and then repeated another time, loy nishnes ela b'shvil davar shenischadish ba. The whole thing was repeated only because of one new detail that was added in it. So even though the whole rest of it is repeated, we're not necessarily meant to darshan anything from the rest of it. It's only telling us, it's only repeating it in order to add that one detail. So therefore, over here, you could say that the pasuk, it's true, the pasuk could have said, but instead, to make it sound nicer, the Torah added the word again, to make it clear that the kinui is without knowing whether nitmah or lo nitmah. But it's not necessarily meant that the second kinui should teach us anything. Therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says, we only have one, and therefore that teaches us that it's a reshus. We have no basis for saying that it's a choyv. Well, Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold that way. He holds that every word in the Torah is actually meant there to teach us something. It's not just there for stylistic reasons. Therefore, according to him, you have two kinuis, and one teaches us Rishus, and the other teaches us that it's not only Rishus, but rather Choyva. Okay, so that's a reason for Rabbi Shmuel to say that that particular one is Rishus. Similarly, when we go to the next one, we said the same thing we have as far as the Kohen becoming Tomei for his sister or his wife or any of the other relatives mentioned over there. So the positive is Loch Yitama, and Rabbi Shmuel understands it to be a Rishus, and Rabbi Akiva understands it to be a Choyva. So the same thing. So we asked why would Rabbi Shmuel make this an exception? Why would he hold this is not a full fledged mitzvah essay? So my time in the Rabbi Shmuel, because I did a sif emir al kohen bnei Aaron ba'amarta alem lenefesh leitam ba'amav. Since the pasuk starts by saying that a kohen is not allowed to become tamei by a dead body, it's tzricha lemichtav lo hitama. So therefore, necessarily, the pasuk has to add the word lo hitama to tell us that that's an exception to the rule. If it weren't for that, we wouldn't even know that there's an exception. We would think that a kohen is not allowed to become tamei even for his close relatives. So therefore, we need the lo yitama to tell us that, but it's not meant to teach us that it's a mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva or Mechoiva, on the other hand, Rabbi Akiva, what does Rabbi Akiva answer to that? Rabbi Akiva, who holds that it's a choiva, Tosfos points out, by the way, that there's a nafkamina. What if a person is oisik with mitzvah? What if a person is involved with a different mitzvah? So we talked about in Nazir, and Tosfos refers to it over here, Gemara in Zvachim, that tells about a Yosef HaKoyen, whose wife passed away Erev Pesach, and he didn't want to go to the funeral and be matame for her because he wanted to be involved in bringing the Kohen Pesach and that mitzvah. And the Chachamim forced him to become tame for her. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, they would have no right to do that, because according to him, it's only Rishus. According to Rabbi Akiva, that it's Choyva, then he has to become tame for her, even if he's Oisik in a different mitzvah. Anyway, so for Rabbi Akiva, so what does Rabbi Akiva answer to Rabbi Shmuel's argument? He says, Mi ki im l'sheire nafka. Because you already have the second pasuk continues after the first pasuk says the nefesh leitama ba'amav. The second pasuk continues ki in l'sheira except for his relatives. So we already know that his relatives are an exception. So therefore, when it continues lo yitama lo mali, why would it have to add after it lists the seven relatives that he becomes tamei for? Why would it have to add the words lo yitama for who he should become tamei? Must be lochayva. Must be to tell us that it's an obligation. So what does Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He says, Loch mitama ve'in mitama le'evareha. He says there's a different thing you learn from the word loch. You learn, as we learned at the end of Nazir, that the Kohen can become Tomei only if the body is complete, but not if there are limbs missing from the body. So for example, in Nazir, we had learned about that. We learned an example, for example, where Kohen's father was beheaded, so therefore the head is missing from the body. Here, Rashi mentioned a different point. What if, for example, one of these relatives was one of these relatives was a mukashchin that was suffering from leprosy or some similar disease to that, where limbs fall off their body? So how do we know, therefore, that the Kohen is not allowed to become Tomei for those individual limbs, to bury them? For that, we need the word loch, which implies only for the complete body and not for those individual limbs. So therefore, according to him, yeah, you use the word loch for that, Rasha. V'Rabakiva, what does Rabakiva answer back to that? He says, in Cain, if that's all the Pasuk needed to tell us, lichtev rachmona loch, then the Pasuk could have just said loch, the lishtek, and then stop there. Yitama lamali, why does it have to add the word yitama? In other words, let's look at the pasuk. V'la'choseh b'sula akroiva elav, for his sister who's unmarried, who's close to him, ashelah hoselish, who's never been married, lo yitama. So what does that have to say? For her, he should become tamei. It should just say for her. And we would understand, of course, we're talking about becoming tamei. That's the context of the pasuk. So therefore, why does it need to say yitama? Lomali, shmamina. Therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, from the word yitama, we learn that it's not just a mitzvah, but rather it's a chol. Okay, Rabbi Shmuel. So what does Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? The Gemara says, like before, I do the cost of loch, cost of nami yitama. Again, for stylistic reasons, once it says loch, then it also says yitama, as we said before. Look at the Tanit, Rabbi Shmuel, as we learned from a braisa, from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanit, Rabbi Shmuel, called parasha, shenem of a nishness, any parasha that was said and repeated in the Torah, lo nishness, elabid, shvil, davash, and eschadish, ba, it was repeated only because of something new that was in it. So in other words, here also, the pasuk needs to say the word loch to teach us this din about the Evarim. And once it does, then for stylistic reason, it also adds the word, yitama. So according to him, the word loch is what we doushin from, that you can't be metama le'evarim, and the word yitama is just there for stylistic reasons. To be exact, I mean, before we said that loch yitama teaches us that he can't be metama le'evareha, whereas before we said that once it said l'nefesh le'itama ba'amav, Rabbi Shmuel had said that we need the word loh yitama just to tell us for chal that they're mutter. So the Minhas Sotah explains that when he said we had to say means we need some pasuk. So we have a pasuk that tells us, fine, we have in the end, we have the words kiim l'sheiroi, and therefore we have the word loh available for this drasha about Evarim, and the word yitama about Rabbi Shmuel would hold is not there for any drasha, just for stylistic reasons. Okay, so that's why he holds that one is rishus. Now on to the third one. The third one we said was Rabbi Shmuel says that when the Torah says you can work with avodim knanim forever is a reshus, it's an optional thing. And Rabbi Akiva says that it's a choiva, it's a requirement. You're not allowed to free them unnecessarily. So again, let's go with the same thing. My time with Rabbi Shmuel. Why does Rabbi Shmuel say that it's only a reshus? So like this, because we know we have a pasuk that tells us that when the Jewish people enter the land of Canaan, they're not allowed to leave alive any member of the seven nations of Canaan. So now the Torah needs to tell us the word va'olam b'ham ta'avodu, l'mishri echam nekola umas shabala knanis v'holid men abein. And what does that come to teach us? Says Rabbi Shmuel, it comes to teach us if you have a member of any other nation from Chutzlaritz, moved to Eretz Yisrael, married a woman from Canaan or from any of the other seven nations, and he had a son with her. So now you need to know, you are allowed to buy him as an eved. You should know that the din of La'olam Behem Ta'avodu does not apply to that. In fact, Tosfos points out this is the source for where we have that when it comes to Goyim, you go according to the father. You have similar kinds of things as far as other things. For example, if a Mitzri, and we know that a Mitzri is not allowed to intermarry into their Jewish people, a Mitzri Ger, or his child, or his children, are not allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people, only his grandchildren. So what happens, and on the other hand, for example, we have a male from Ammon and Moab is never allowed to. So what happens, for example, if a Mitzri man marries an Ammoni woman, or vice versa? So the din is you go according to the father in determining what they come from. There's an interesting thing in that regard also. They talk about, there's the famous Gemara that says that descendants of Haman taught Torah in Bnei Brak And it's brought that in particular that refers to the Shmuel Bar Shilas, one of the Amoraim. So there's a famous question, there's a Mechilta that says you're not allowed to accept Jared from Amalek. So how could he be descended from Haman and he or his ancestor be a Ger? So there was different answers, one of them being that maybe that Mechilta is not accepted by Halacha, but there is another explanation that he may have been descended from Haman only on his mother's side, and based on our Gemara over here, that makes him not a descendant of Amalek. A descendant of Amalek, Api Halacha, would only be if his father's father's father, etc., was Haman or any other member of Amalek. Anyway, so therefore, so Rabbi Shmuel says this is what you need the pasuk for. That if one of the, that if the father is from a different nation and the mother is a Canaanist, that you're allowed to buy him. That he's not considered a Canaanite, you don't have to kill him together with the seven nations of Canaan. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Minayin la'echem na'umas shabal ha'knanis v'hulid menabein. How do we know exactly that? That if a member of one of the other nations had relations with a Canaanist and had a son with her, shakter ashoy l'knois ha'be'eved, you would be allowed to buy that son as an eved. The din of lo'isachaya kol neshama does not apply to him because he goes according to his father's nationality. How do we know that? Talmud Lema, therefore, the pasuk says, regarding Avodim Knanim, the Gam Mibnei Ateshavim Agorim Imachem, the pasuk says, also from the sons of the residents who live among you in Eretz Yisrael, from them you're allowed to buy. So in other words, since this guy is now residing in Eretz Yisrael, and he's not considered one of the seven nations of Canaan, therefore, and you're allowed to buy Avodim from them, so it means, in other words, that even, so this father came from some other country and settled in Eretz Yisrael, you are now allowed, he and his sons, and him, for that matter, are allowed to be Avodim Knan. On the other hand, continues the Braisa, what if the other way around, what if Knani father goes and has relations with a woman from one of the other nations, beholded me men of Dan and has a son with her. You would think, maybe you're allowed to buy that son as an Eved also. Maybe that son is also not considered one of the seven nations of Canaan. No, Talmud Lema. Therefore, the pasuk continues, asher lidu ba'artichem, that they gave birth in your country. Meaning, in other words, so we're talking about other people from other lands who settled in your country of Eretz Yisrael, and they married over there and had children. Implying, it implies that only those who were born in your land, meaning that their father was not from that land, but came from somewhere else, and they were only born in the land because their father came from someplace else, not from the ones who have a hereditary thing of living in the land because their father was a Canaanite. And by the way, that would apply even if the father moved to a different country. Where that son, if you ever get a hold of him, is also going to be under the rule of Loisachayah upon the Shama, because he's still one of the seven nations of Canaan, even though right now he's not living in Eretz Yisrael. So we see from that that it goes according to the father. Rashi in Yevamos, where the Gemara also brings this drasha, explains, usually when a couple gets married, very often the woman stays where she is, and the man comes from a different country and marries her. That is why we're assuming that Hanelodim Ba'artzechem would be ones where the mother is a Canaanist, whereas the Gorim Ba'artzechem would be where the father is a Canaanite. Anyway, therefore, says Rabbi Shmuel, so you need the pasuk to tell us that. To tell us that whole concept that you have children who, even though they're half Canaanim, are not considered Canaanim la'alocha because only their mother is a Canaanist, and that you're allowed to buy them as an eved ivri. So therefore, you need it for that. So you can't use it to say that it's a mitzvah. V'Rav Akiva. So what does Rav Akiva answer to that? He says mimehem tichnu nafka. He says that you could learn from the fact that the pasuk says you can buy from them. So therefore, la'olam behem ta'avodu lomali. So why would we need the la'olam behem ta'avodu? Must be l'chayva. Must be to tell us that it's an obligation. What does Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He says, v'hem v'loy ba'acheichem. He says, Rabbi Shmuel would say that it means the word v'hem is actually a mute. It means you're allowed to enslave an Eved Knani forever, but you're not allowed to enslave your brothers, a fellow Jew. Or not only forever, but that you're not allowed to make them work. Avodas oven. The pasuk is saying, "La'olam behem ta'avodu." Forever, you're allowed to have them work for you as slaves, implying, but your own brother, as a fellow Jew, you're not allowed to have him do menial labor like a slave. We'll learn in next year, Beis Hashem, in Masechta Kiddushin. We'll talk in some detail. We're going to have a whole discussion there about Evan Ivry, what kind of work you're allowed to have Evan Ivry do and what not. You're not allowed to have him do certain kinds of menial, servile, very low-class work. So therefore, so we learn from that, from the word behem, that you're not allowed to do that. So therefore, again, you don't have the word lo'olam behem ta'avodu to teach us that it's a mitzvah to keep an Evan Kanani forever. Ver Rav Akiva, so what does Rav Akiva answer to that? What does Rav Akiva answer back to that? He says, "Ba'achechem misefer dekron nafka." That you don't need a miut from the word behem. The pasuk clearly continues. "Ba'achechem bnei Yisrael ishba'achav loisir devoy b'farech." Among your brothers, the Jewish people, a man to his brother, you should not make him work b'farech. You should not make him work with hard labor. So therefore, right away, then you see that there's a difference between the work that a Jew, that a Jewish slave does, and that a goyish slave does. So we already have a miut from that. So therefore, we don't really need the miut from behem. One of the mafoshim, the Torah Saknos, points out that even though, I mean, you could argue there's a difference between avodas oven and avodas parech, but the Gemara is maybe assuming that working forever but not being avodas parech and working avodas parech but only for a period of time are both equal, and therefore, if you're not allowed to do one, then you're not allowed to do the other. Another point, the Hamak Dover makes a point that the whole idea of Avodas Perech is the kind of, what is Avodas Perech? So for example, the Rashi brings on the Pesukim that it means, for example, that you give the Eved work to do without telling him a defined time when it's going to be over or a defined point when it's going to be over. For example, let's say you tell him, start dig over here and continue digging until I get back. He doesn't know whether you're going to be back in an hour or 5 hours or in 3 weeks. So therefore, it's like mental torture for him. So for an Evan Ivry, you're not allowed to do that. You can tell him, work here for an hour. You can tell him, work until you reach this and this point in the field, or whatever. Whereas an Evan Kanani, technically, you're allowed to do that. So therefore, so the idea of Avodas Perach includes the idea of that you think that it's forever. So therefore, so La'olam Ha'am Ta'avodu and Avodas Perach are really two sides of the same coin. Anyway, so therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, so therefore, on that basis, you already know that you can't do that to an Evan Ivry. So therefore, if it says Bahem, then it must mean to tell us that it's a mitzvah to keep an Eved Ivri forever. An Eved Kanani, rather, forever. Vir Rabbi Shmuel, so what does Rabbi Shmuel answer back to that? He says, again, since fine, it does have to say in the end of the pasuk that Vachechem, to say that you're not allowed to make a Yid work as Avodah Saved, Ksiv Nami, Bahem, so therefore, the pasuk also mentioned the word Bahem, referring to Avodah Kananim, and again, it's not necessary, but again, the Chedotana de Rabbi Shmuel, the Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, called Pasha Shinem of Anishinus, Lanishinus, Elabishvil Dovashinus Chadishvil, because the Torah may repeat a whole thing just because of one Chidush in it, and the rest of it is only there for stylistic reasons. So therefore, in other words, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not takin necessary to say the word behem. It's only there for stylistic reasons, and therefore we can't douse in anything from it. So it's specifically in those three cases that Rabbi Shmuel holds that it's reshus rather than choiva, because he holds looking carefully at the psukim requires, and looking rather at other psukim that say similar but different dinim, requires you to say that these are reshus, because otherwise requires you to say that these are reshus. Whereas in each of those cases, Rabbi Akiva learns differently and therefore is able to say that they're choiva. Okay. Getting back now to the topic of sota. Omer of Chista, Znusa Bevesa, Znus that takes place in the house, Ki Karya L'Shum Shema, is as bad, is as destructive as Karya in Shum Shema. So Rashi explained that Shum Shema is sesame seeds, and Karya is a type of worm that attacks them. So in other words, they're the same way. You have a pile of sesame seeds, and then you have a worm that attacks them, and soon you have no sesame seeds left. The same way the house gets destroyed by znus that takes place there. Tosfos Shantz on the side actually has the other way around. They say that karya means a pumpkin, and shumshuma then would be the type of worm that attacks it. So it means the other way around, just like a pumpkin that gets attacked by those worms. Soon you have nothing of it left. The same way you're gonna have nothing left of the household after that. The Amr of Chista, also of Chista says, Tukva Bevesa, anger in the house is also Kikaria the Shum Shema, is also like Kikaria the Shum Shema, it's also just as dangerous and destructive as Nus. And the Gemara points out, Aidi Ba'aidi Be'ipsa. Now, both of those really are primarily referring to the wife. When the wife is Mizana, or when she gets angry very easily, then the whole house suffers. So Rashi explains, because then she's busy with what she's doing. She's not doing the work around the house. So what happens is, if she ends up committing znus, in fact, then she ends up taking her husband's money and spending it on the people that she's involved, on the men that she's involved with. So that's why I was saying that particularly when she does, then it's very dangerous for the stability of the household. But if the husband is mizano, or the husband gets angry easily, then it's not as big a deal. Obviously, it's a big deal. It is a different kind of big deal. And sometimes there can't even be cases where it would be grounds for her to demand a get. And of course he himself is going to get punished for it also. But the point is, it's not as destructive necessarily to the stability of the house as when she has these nidus. And the Gemara continues, but at the beginning, Kodem Shechotu Yisrael, before the Jewish people sinned, in particular we mean, Rashi says, without Raias, before the Jewish people got involved with Adayas, which actually the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that the reason why the Jewish people got involved with Avodah Zarah is because they figured it'll give them license to do Adayas, because the various idols, the various getchkas don't care about that one way or the other, whereas Hashem does. So before they got involved with Adayas, Shechina Shoda in Kol Echa Be'echad. The Shechina would rest in every person's individual house. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ki Hashem Elokecha Mishalach B'Kerev Machanecha. As the Pasuk says, Hashem, your God, is walking within your camp, meaning within your camp, within your household. Hashem Kavyachal, Hashem's Shechina, is walking with you. So in your own house. Kivin Shechotu, but once they sin, Nistalka Shechina Mehem, then the Shechina went away from them. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'lo Yira V'cha Ervas Dover, that Hashem should not see a matter of Erva among you, V'shov Me'acharecha, and he will turn around from following you. So in other words, once there's Erva in the house, then the Shechina goes in, then the Shechina goes away from the house. So Mao Shor discusses a little bit that it means, in other words, that so again, we're saying, you know, when an individual woman is mezana, then it destroys the house the same way. And when an individual person is mezana, then also it causes the Shechina to leave that house. And in fact, Mao Shor points out, when you get down to it, if the znus causes the Shechina to leave the house, already that is destroying the house. Forget about what we said before, that it destroys the house, because like Rashi says, then she's involved with his nurse and not taking care of household matters and spending her husband's money on other people. More to the point is also she's caused the Shechina to leave the house, and therefore that's even worse. That also causes the house to be destroyed. The Gemara continues. Anybody who does one single mitzvah in this world, that mitzvah will walk in front of him and announce to clear the way for him when he after 120, and announces in front of him that he's coming, but when he dies. When he's on his way to Olam Haba. Shenema, as opposed to Holach Lefanecha Tzidkecha, your tzedek will go before you. So your tzedek, meaning the tzedakah that you did, or other kinds of mitzvahs. In fact, in the Yerushalmi, regularly the word mitzvah is used specifically for tzedakah. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, because tzedakah is a more all-encompassing mitzvah than many of the others, in the sense that other mitzvahs you do with one individual limb of your body, whereas tzedakah, you're taking money that you could have sustained your whole body with and giving it to tzedakah. So therefore, the Yerushalmi regularly calls tzedakah just plain mitzvah, and here the Gemara may be using it in the same sense also. So it walks in front of him and announces the waiver. Mao Shor points out, we know from Pirkei Avos that every person does a mitzvah. Always a mitzvah achas, kind of like prakut echad. We know that a person's mitzvahs and a person's averus create malachim. So those are the malachim that we're talking about that are going to go and announce the way in front of him and so forth. And Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni continues, when a person is over one avera in this world, in particular we mean arayas, then that Avera enwraps him, v'holachas lefanav l'yom hadin, and goes before him to the yom hadin. So to speak, it wraps him up as if like it's forcing him to go with it to the judgment. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yilofsu Orchis Dargam. They'll be wrapped up. The word Yilofsu is related to the word Malafafase. Orchis Dargam, the ways of their, the paths of their ways. Yalu Batoyu Viyavedu. They will go up in nothingness, which refers to Gehenim, Viyavedu, and they will be lost. So we see, in other words, that the Avera, the result of Orchis Darkum, of acting in their improper ways, the result of it is Malafafase, that it wraps him up, so to speak, and like forces him to go there. Unlike, of course, when it comes to going to Gan Eden, the person doesn't need to be forced. So therefore, the Malach just goes ahead of him to announce, to clear the way, to announce the way, doesn't need to force him to go anywhere, obviously. Whereas when it comes to, when it comes to the Aveda, which is taking him to Gehenna, and there it kind of has to wrap him around and force him to go. But we learn from that pasuk, Orchis Darkum, Yalu Batoyu V'Yovedu, that they go up, they go into Toyu, emptiness, which refers to Gehenna. Okay. The Gemara says, Shnanhosim. Now, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, when we talk about, we talk briefly on Daf Beis about the one, I skipped a couple of lines. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a kshura by kekevel. Rabbi Eliezer says that not only does the Avera wrap him around and take him to Gehenna, it's tied to him like a dog. Shenema, as the pasuk says, we find by Yosef with Potiphar's wife. He didn't want to listen to her. Lishkav etzla liyasima, to lie with her, to lie next to her, to be with her. Why the double expression? I mean, lishkav etzla ba'olamazeh. He didn't want to lie next to her in this world, liyasima la'olamaba, because he didn't want to have to be with her in olamaba. He knew that if he lies with her in this world, he's going to be stuck with her like a dog in olamaba. In particular, the reason why we're mentioning dogs. When dogs mate after they mate for a period of time, they're stuck together. They're not able to separate right away. Only after a period of time. So therefore the Gemara uses that metaphor to refer to the way the Avera is stuck to the person. Okay. The Gemara continues. Now, so again, we learned on Daf Beis, we talked about the one or two aid, the one aid, we said one aid is enough to make it that the woman's going to be also to her husband. On the other hand, we said the kinui and the sphira maybe need more aidim. So let's analyze. Tnanhos, and we learned later on in our Masechta that we said that if there's one aid that she was tomei, then that's it, she's also to her husband. And the Mishnah says there, shahoya badin, you would think of kavachomer not to believe him. Uma edus harishona she'ino sar to isur olam. Madaf the first edus, which we're going to explain soon. That the first edus means the edus of stira, the fact that the aid that comes and says that she was secluded with that guy. Ein she'ino sar to isur olam. That doesn't necessarily answer her forever because she can drink the soda water and she may turn out to be tahor. Ein meskayemus v'pachas mishnayim. Nevertheless, it's not upheld with less than two edim, because, in other words, you can't accept Rabbi Yeshua. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua says that the stira requires two edim. So edus hachrona, you would think then to say that's the final edus, the edus of truma, she'esau to isu olam, which would answer her to her husband and also to eat truma forever. Eina din shalit the sky of pachas mishnayim, shouldn't it be a kavachomer that it's not upheld by less than two? Why is it that one ed is enough? Talmud Lema. Well, therefore, the pasuk says the aid ain't ba. Therefore, the pasuk says there's no aid against her. And we established before on that phase, kol sheyesh ba. It means any aid that there is against her, even if there's only one aid, is enough to make her usher. Is enough to make her usher forever. That's on back on that phase. The Gemara had explained that the word the aid ain't ba means there's no two aidim against her. There's only one aid, and that's enough to usher her. So the Gemara asks, now the Mishnah asks, V'kal v'chomer l'edus harishona. Well, in that case, shouldn't we say on the contrary, we should make a kal v'chomer for the first edus, for the edus of stira, me'ata, based on what we said. We should say a kal v'chomer, ma edus achrona, she'isau to isu olam. Ma dech the final edus, which makes her also forever. Which makes her also forever. And we're saying that edus of stira is enough to, one aid is enough, not of stira, of tumah, that she actually was mizana. One aid is enough to make her also forever. So then we should make a kavachomer. So the first Eidus, which is weaker because it doesn't have such a severe effect, it doesn't ask her forever because conceivably she could still drink the soda water. Shouldn't be a kavachomer that should be able to be upheld by one aid. Why there do we need two aidim? And the answer is Tamudlam Kimotza Ba'erastavar. The answer is we have a Zeta Shub. The Pasuk says regarding a husband and wife that he divorces her because he found in her Ervas Dover a matter of Erva. What Tosfos, by the way, points out that the Gemara could have schlugged up the Kavachoyim anyway, because when it comes to Truma, as we said before, there's a Raglayim Ladover, there's very strong reason to believe one aid, because there was already Kinui and Stira, but instead the Mishnah is going to find a different way. So Talmud Lam, Kimotzava Ervas Dover, the Pasuk says he found in her a matter of Erva, and it uses the word Dover. Elsewhere, the Torah says that it takes two or three Edim to establish a matter. So therefore, we have a kavachomer. Ma dover ha'omer lahalom al pishnayim edim afkan al pishnayim. The same way as there, you need two edim. The same way over here, you need two edim for the stira. It's fine to have one aid for the tumah, but for the stira, you need two edim. So the Gemara asks, what's the limud? Hi, mi kimotza ba'ervas dover nafka. Are we learning that from kimotza ba'ervas dover that you need two? Hi, mi ba nafka. We said before that we learned it from the word ba, where it said the aid ain't ba. And we said on daf days that it means ba v'loy b'kinui, ba v'loy b'stira. That it means that the aid ain't ba, this that we say that one aid is enough to make her osir, that would only be in tumah, but the word ba is a mute, meaning not kinui and not stira. So from that we know that you need two aidim. What are you telling me that we're learning from the gzeira shava from the word dover? So mibole is what we needed to learn it from. And the answer is hokinami kamer. You're right, that's actually what the tana means. It means that you don't need two aidim because it says bah, implying that one aid is enough only for tumah but not for kinui v'stira. But the gzeira shava is for something else. Tumah ba'alma b'loy kinui v'loy stira d'loy mehem an aid echad minolam. How do we know in general if there was no kinui and there was no stira? How do we know that one aid should not be believed and that we should need two? We're saying if there was kinui and stira and there's one, how would we know that otherwise in fact one aid is not believed? So for that we need the gzeira shava. Nemakan kimotzva ervas dover v'nemalahalim al pi shnayim erkel shnei edim al pi shloish edim yokum dover ma dover ha'omalahalim edim shnayim afkan edim shnayim. So you're right, you don't need the gzeira shava for the case of a sota. For that you have the word ba. Rather, we have mute from the word ba, but rather we're using it for the regular case where there was no kinui and no stira, but one aid comes and says that a woman was mezana. We don't believe him because he's only one aid, and that we learn from the gzeira shava. Tosfos wonders, I mean, b'chlal, why would he even need a gzeira shava? Why would we think that one aid should be believed? Normally, we know we always need two aid. We always need two aid in. Why all of a sudden here would we think that maybe one aid should be enough? That we need a posse to tell us the other way around. So Tosfos leaves the question open. Minhas Knois answer is that maybe once we have a miut on stira, then maybe we would think that it means so in that case we have to be mamayit anything. That's part of the question also. So there's an answer that giving the soita, the water to drink, is kind of like dinin nefoshes, because she may die from it, and still we're saying that you need kinui stira, you need to aid him, so therefore maybe only in that case, maybe because it might lead to her death, do you need to aid him, but tuma alone, maybe it would be enough, one, and therefore we need the gzeira shava to tell us otherwise. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.